that there are no lectures next week. And the original reason I was given for this was because next week is March break. Maybe it's spring break, yeah. But I was told even though it was in February, it was March break, so there will be no lectures next week. Okay, well, as usual, I have to finish last week's lecture first. And so for about the first half hour, there'll be just sort of more generalities on what groups act where and what sort of decompositions you have. And then hopefully in about a half an hour, we'll get down to things that are very specific to GLN and talk about Fourier coefficients, Whitaker models, multiplicity one, things like this. But in the beginning, still just more generalities on automorphic representations. So last time we talked about the action of the Hecke algebra on the space of K-finite automorphic forms. Today we're going to begin talking about smooth automorphic forms and the action there. And so I guess as always, G is GLN, although everything that I say today will be valid for G, reductive, and K, a number field, even though everything I say is valid for a global function field over a finite field, in some sense it's So let me remind you that the space of smooth automorphic forms, these were functions, smooth functions on the adelic points, which were, let's see, they were satisfying automorphy. So they were invariant under the rational points. KF finite. So they're fixed by some, they're right invariant by some open compact subgroup of the finite points of the adels. They were satisfied a system of differential equations, so ZG finite. And then the important thing was that they were of uniform moderate growth, which meant that there exists an integer such that for all differential operators, so in this context, those are things in the universal enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra at infinity, then you have a condition that the absolute value of the derivative of phi at g is less than some constant that could depend on the derivative and then some norm of g to the r. Okay, so they're moderate growth, polynomial growth on the group, and the rate of growth is uniform for all derivatives. Okay. Now, so the nice thing is that actually the group acts in this space by right translation. This is the thing that we did not have for the usual K-finite automorphic forms. The only thing that acted was the Hecke algebra. Now the group actually does act by right translation. That's a nice thing. Now the thing which is either nice or not so nice, depending on your proclivities, is now you have to worry about topology. You have to worry about topological representations. And I'm not going to dwell on this. Let me just, for completeness, at least let me say what happens. So if you fix R, say, and you let A infinity R, this is going to be the things in the smooth things, with this fixed rate of growth, so such that, let's say, the soup on G, absolute G to the minus R, phi x, oops, got to differentiate on the other side. Okay, so they're just the functions with a specified rate of growth, basically. And then if we fix, say, an open compact in the finite adels, adelic points of the group, then it turns out that if you fix the rate of growth and this is like fixing a level classically, then this is actually a smooth Fréchet representation of moderate growth in the sense of Wallach. And the topology is defined by seminorms, and the thing is, there's a seminorm for each derivative, and these are just, they're these seminorms. This condition, this sort of fixing the rate of growth, basically says that the seminorms defined by the soup are finite. So this is the soup over G, G minus R, absolute value X phi G, so derivative, that these seminorms are finite by definition, and these seminorms define a topology here. Okay, so this is a smooth representation of moderate growth of the group at infinity, so GLNR, GLNC. Okay, so the topology is really coming from these seminorms, right? These are the things that we didn't have before, in some sense, right? Because this comes from this uniform growth property where we have all these derivatives. And then if you look at the things fixed by L, then this is, again, it's sort of a limit of these guys. I guess I'm using R. Okay. And A infinity is in the limit of these guys. So these are both sort of inductive limits, and so at worst, this carries sort of a limit Fréchet topology. Okay. I'm not going to do much with this. I'm just putting this up here to sort of let you know what the topology looks like and where it comes from, and just to point out that in some sense, what you've lost by letting the group act is that you've sort of complicated the technicalities of the representation theory involved. Okay. Yes. Uh-huh. Well, first off, you don't have neat formulas, and I'm not even sure in this context that things are finite dimensional. So we did say that when we were dealing with K-finite automorphic forms, if you fixed the level and you fixed, then they're finite dimensional. I don't know if there's a nice formula for them, for the dimensions in general. I don't know.
It seems to me that, you know, you have the GL2 classical case.
Right.
And then there's a big jump to GLN.
Yeah.
Without kind of pursuing the classical approach.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, for GLN, once you get above GL2, then there's sort of no holomorphic structure on the symmetric space. And so a lot of the techniques that you had, anything involving Riemann-Roch or anything like that, you lose. Okay, and so, yeah, in that sense, there did seem to be a jump. Okay. On the other hand, if you deal with other groups, right, like I said, this works for other groups as well. If you deal with a symplectic group, then you can talk about holomorphic Ziegle modular forms, and there are a lot of the formulas. And in this formulation, it doesn't look any different. It looks about the same. Okay. So there are formulas in certain contexts. Most of the formulas I know come about from using, I mean, where you have real formulas come from using complex analysis somehow. That's not to say that they're not formulas here. That's just to say that if there are, I don't know them. I've never seen, I mean, there's this statement of this theorem of Harshaner that says you have finite dimensionality, but it does not come with a formula, as far as I know. Okay. Anyway, so there is a topology. But many things are still the same. So here's a theorem. If you take a smooth automorphic form, and you look at the representation that it generates. Okay, so you let V phi be. So I right translate by the group. I can do that now. And then, since I have a topology, you always have to take closure. Okay? Then this actually sits inside, well, let me just say, so this representation that generates is, actually and admissible. Representation of the group. And now, in this context, I told you what admissible meant in terms of representations of the Hecke algebra. What this means is that if you look at, so this is the space of K finite functions in Fifi. So if you like, it's V phi intersect the space of usual automorphic forms, then this is admissible. As a module for the Hecke algebra. Okay? That's usually what admissibility means in other, these broader contexts. Okay, so this is nice in the sense that if you look at its k-fixed vector, so you intersect it with the space of usual k-finite automorphic forms, right, which we already said was a subspace of this, then that's admissible in the old context of an H module. And then that makes the following, guarantees that the following gives you reasonable representation, so a smooth automorphic representation is a closed, irreducible subquotient of the space of smooth automorphic forms. Okay. And these are automatically admissible in this sense. Okay, so those are smooth automorphic representations. This is actually where we're going to work most of the time, and you'll see why a little bit later. And then finally, the thing that we really need is that there is a decomposition theorem in this context. And it says that if you take pi and v pi is a smooth automorphic representation, okay, so it's irreducible by definition. It's admissible. So there's a smooth representation of the group itself. Then, let's see, how did I state this? Then there exist smooth, irreducible, admissible representations, pi v, v pi v, of each local group, gv, so that's gkv for a completion. These are smooth, Frechet, of moderate growth, if you're at an Archimedean place, such that so let me just say that pi decomposes as pi infinity tensor pi f, where pi infinity, this is going to be the representation of the groups at infinity, and what it's going to be is it's going to be an honest tensor product of the pi v, except that these now all carry topology. Okay, at the Archimedean places, that's really what this has done. This topology is sort of an Archimedean gadget. And so you have to not only take the tensor product, but you have to take some sort of topological tensor product. Okay, so this is a topological thing at infinity, but at the finite places, you sort of haven't done anything. So it's just a restricted tensor product in the usual sense at the finite places. Okay? I think it's so usually on the tensor product, what is it? Bilinear maps. Linear maps on the tensor product are bilinear maps on the usual place, right? And so I think this is the topology such that you take those bilinear maps and you want them to be, you sort of give it the, And so, yeah, it's definitely a limit of these things, but I think it makes all these bilinear maps, it's either the finest or coarsest topology that makes all these continuous. But yeah, basically you're taking a limit. Yeah. Now, I want to point out something here, because this so, if this is the admissible H module of K finite vectors, okay, so and pi k the associated representation, then what we saw last time was that this thing also had a restricted tensor product decomposition. And these are related. At the finite places, it turns out that there's no difference here. We haven't really introduced any topology at the finite places. So these are the same. And at the Archimedean places, what we have is that if you take these things here. So I should point out that each pi v is a smooth Frechet moderate growth, representation of whatever the local group here. So these will have k fixed vectors, and that's exactly the local component here. Okay, so this decomposition really is sort of the natural one, related to the natural from one from before. And in fact, moreover, the representations that occur in the topological setting are really these, you take the representations, the local representations coming from the k-finite vectors here, and you complete them somehow. There's a way to complete them, and this is called the Castleman-Wallach canonical completion. Okay. So, in other words, not only do the local components here completely determine the local components that occur in the space of k-finite vectors in the algebraic setting, but the local components from the algebraic setting actually completely determine these things here. So they're exactly the same here, and there is a canonical process of going from the representations here, which are purely algebraic, to the representations here, which carry a topology. And this is something called the Castleman-Wallach canonical completion. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about what this is or how it works. When we come to do the Archimedean theory of L functions, we have to work in this context. So you need to be told about it at least. Okay. So that's probably, I probably spent more time on that than is justified by the amount of technical things I'm going to do with it, but that's okay. Anyway, we do have a representation of the group, but this is the price we pay for getting that in some sense. Okay. But like I said, we're not going to deal with the technicalities of this. Okay. So if you don't like topological representations, just take it as a black. As just, there is a topology, and you have to worry about it, and that's good enough. Okay. There were also these L2 automorphic representations. And here, in some sense, the theory is quite clean, and it's also older than any of the other theories. This was the place where the Russians first talked about automorphic representations. So we fix a unitary character. This is going to be our central character. Okay? And we have the space of L2 automorphic forms. So these were phi, g, k mod, g, a to c. They transform by omega under the center. And they're square integrable, mod the center. Okay. And now, G acts here. The group definitely acts here. By right translation, and this is it preserves this just by doing the change of variables and using that this is an invariant measure. So it's a unitary representation. Okay? So in some sense, this is where one at least believes one understands what's going on. And this is where the Russians first began to do automorphic representations in some sense. No. Both. Both, yeah. No, they atalyzed. Mm-hmm. They already atalyzed. So I guess if you look at the papers of Gelfand and P.S., I think the first two are over R, and then the last one is over the Adels, and then the book was Gelfand Grav and P.S. is Adelic. Yeah, so they worked Adelically. Well, what should I do? This theorem remains true in the L2 context. Okay, I could erase it and rewrite it, but let me just say that this remains true in the L2 context. So if I replace this by then I act by the droop. I take the closure in L2, and it's still an admissible representation in the sense that if you take the space of k finite functions inside there, then that's an admissible H module. Yes. Okay. Sorry. So Z is in the center. Okay. Now the center in GLN. So this is. So I'm being abusive. That's really what's going on. The center of GLN is just diagonal matrices. Okay. So. This is a so here it's a diagonal matrix, and here it's a scalar. Sorry. I've done this stuff so long that there's some of these things that just, to me, are just knee-jerk. But yes, ask if I do some of this stuff. Okay. So this theorem is still true. And so this is what this is. So now, I guess the definition that makes sense is that an L2 automorphic representation is an irreducible representation. That occurs in the L2 decomposition of the space of L2 automorphic forms. It's Hilbert space theory. And there's a decomposition theorem. And this is, as far as I know, this is the original decomposition theorem, proved by, actually, my understanding, it was proved by Gelfand and P.S. on a boat somewhere. At least that's what P.S. tells me. That if pi b pi is an L2 automorphic representation, so it's irreducible, admissible. I'm not sure that they really used admissibility. I'm not sure if they did or not. Anyway, then there exists a collection of irreducible, unitary representations, pi v, v pi v, for each place or each local group, GV, such that pi is what they call, it's a restricted tensor product, but everything has to be Hilbert space here. So it's a restricted Hilbert tensor product. Of unitary representations. And they specified it by actually giving a basis for this. So let me not worry about it. But it is true that just as in the case of smooth representations, if I take the K finite vectors and I decompose it, okay, so I get this sequence of algebraic representations, then in each case, the things that occur in the decomposition of the algebraic representation are the k-finite vectors in each one of these. Okay, so these things are still compatible, but you have to do, in some sense, just like here we had to do a completion at infinity where we put a topology, here now everything, in some sense, everything's unitary, so we have topologies everywhere, so we have to worry about that. Yes? Right. Yeah. Yes. Well, you don't really worry so much about. I don't have a context of spectrum in some sense. I'm not unitary. I mean, I'm sort of somewhere in between algebraic and completely topological. So yeah, there I think you just take these closed subquotients. Okay, and here. Yeah, it's the unitary stuff that I'm trying to. Yeah?
Yeah, well, so I think it has to do with the fact that the unitary representation always decomposes that commandable.
Yeah. Yeah, in some sense that's. So yeah, I'm trying to avoid that bit of technicality just by stating it in this way. Okay. But the representations that we're really going to be interested in are the so-called cuspidal representations. And so now let me define those and tell you just a little bit about them. And then I'll move on to GLN. Okay. So remember what a cusp form is. So an automorphic form. In any context, so smooth, k-finite, L2, is cuspidal if, when you do these left unipotent integrations, these vanish. So this is over U, A mod UK, where these are unipotent radicals of parabolic subgroups. The point here is that this condition is a left integration. Okay? All of our actions in the smooth context or the L2 context, they're by right translation by the group. In the K-finite context, they're right translation by the Heck algebra. So the actions are all by right translation. So the space of cusp forms is preserved. And it's a sub-representation. So either A naught, in whatever context, or all. Pardon me? No. Why? Oh, you mean in terms of.
Yeah, well, my general question is how do the cut forms fit inside the L2? Because if you're in the L2 world.
How do they. There's all the Eisenstein suit. I mean, there's continuous spectrum. Sure. From the integral of Eisenstein series on the axis. Yeah. But it does contain all cuspidal representations. And in fact, this is probably the fundamental theorem about cuspidal representations. And it was originally proved in the L2 context. It's the theorem of Gelfond and Piotrowski-Shapiro. It says that L2 omega decomposes as a direct sum of irreducible submodules with finite multiplicity. Okay, so in other words, if I look at the space of, I fixed my unitary central character, and I look at just the cusp forms, then this is a direct sum with finite multiplicity of some, these are irreducible subspaces. Okay, unitary subspaces. Okay. These are the L2 cuspidal representations. So the representations these are sub-representations. These are honest spaces of functions in the group acts by right translation on them. So these occurring in any of these L2 cuspidal omegas are called L2 cuspidal representations. Okay? And notice, do notice that they, I said, irreducible submodules. These are not these general subquotient-looking things. These are really made up of honest cuspidal automorphic forms. These are functions on the group. Okay? In the more general context where you take these subquotients, situation's a little bit messier. But here, these are honest functions on the group. So these consist of honest spaces of cusp forms. Okay? These are functions on the group. That's important. It's very important. Now, we talked about last time how, since cusp forms are rapidly decreasing, if we fix one of these unitary central characters, then the space of k-finite automorphic forms with a unitary character is contained in, cuspidal with the unitary character is contained in L20 with a unitary character. And in fact, in terms of representation theory, representations have what are called smooth vectors, and it turns out if you take the smooth vectors in L2, you get exactly the smooth automorphic forms. And if you take these k-finite vectors, like we've done a couple of times today, and you look at the k-finite vectors here, once you have this, these are the k-finite vectors here, and these are just the usual cuspidal automorphic forms. But what this does, this lets you then conclude, at least in this case of unitary central characters, and I don't know, this is the only way I know how to derive this result. I don't know if there's an independent way of doing it. So then, if you look at the space of smooth cusp forms with a given central character, if that's just the smooth vectors in here, that's a sort of a local condition. I can put smoothness on here. So this decomposes in exactly the same way with exactly the same multiplicities of the so-called smooth vectors here, and for the k-finite automorphic forms, I have basically have the same decompositions And so the spaces are either the smooth cuspidal representations or just the K-finite cuspidal representations. So, and part of, the fact that these just cascade down onto one another, I think is one of the reasons why people tend to slough off whether they're really dealing with K-finite cusp forms, smooth cusp forms, L2 cusp forms. They're all sort of the same thing. You're just sort of taking successive closures or completions of some sort. Okay. I think I won't say anything about things that do not have unitary central character. If the central character is not unitary, basically any irreducible subspace of one of these things is a cuspidal, I would call a cuspidal representation. They'll all have central character. If the central character is not unitary, you can twist it by a character to make the central character unitary, and then it falls into this situation. So, but I don't want to worry about that. Okay. That's the end of the general spiel on automorphic representations. This is where things live, but like I said, we're not going to use a lot of the technicalities involved in the topology of the representations and things. But that's where things live. That's what one has to do if one wants to actually let the group move by right translation. Okay. And primarily it's these cuspidal representations that at least I will be interested in, or we will be interested in this part of this course. Okay. So now we will go back to sort of doing things by hand a little bit. I now want to move on to things which are now GLN specific. So now G equals GLN for real. Or something that one should always think about is GLN times GLM, but I'm really going to talk mainly about GLN. And when I say for real, I just mean that the results that I'm going to give now are for the most part specific to GLN. Not entirely, but for the most part, they're specific to GLN. The first topic that I want to talk about, so this is the beginning of Lecture 4. Someday I'll either catch up or I'll be completely a lecture behind and then I'll just forget about it. But I want to talk about Fourier expansions and multiplicity 1 theorems. GLN. Somebody's mentioned multiplicity 1 already. I forget who. I think Henry mentioned it. For GLN, you can actually prove that these numbers are either 0 or 1. So in other words, if a representation occurs in the space of cusp forms, it occurs exactly once, no more than once. That's the multiplicity 1 theorem. And we'll be able to prove that probably at the end of this lecture, which means at the beginning of Tuesday in 2 weeks. For today, I would at least like to get Fourier expansions talked about. So I'm going to take a smooth cuspidal representation of GLN, and I'm going to take a cusp form in it. Okay? And at some point, hopefully today, we will actually see that this smoothness gets used. In other words, the topology at the Archimedean completions will be used today. Okay. So we need the Fourier expansions because when we begin to do the theory of L functions in this context, we are really going to mimic Hecke, sort of augmented by Tate's thesis a little bit. But Hecke's, right, Hecke got the L function out of the Fourier expansion. We're going to do the same thing in some sense. So let me go through GL2 and show you what the Fourier expansion looks like, and hopefully it will look familiar. So, okay. So remember, what were the translations in GL2? They were the set of matrices, just the upper triangular matrices. Okay. Those were the translations. So if I look at x goes to phi, 1x0, 1g, okay, and I look at this as a function of x, and now here x is just some of del, this is, well, it's actually smooth and periodic. Right, it's periodic with respect to the canonical discrete subgroup, which is just the rational points of the group. You have good timing. You missed all the messy topological stuff. Well, that it was worth it. You'll be glad. you can ask anybody. Okay? So this is periodic. This is an abelian group. So you've got abelian Fourier analysis. So if you fix a character, so if you take psi, a continuous character, we define either the psi Fourier coefficient, or in this context it's called the psi Whitaker function, by, well, it's what one would do if one, it's just the way you compute Fourier coefficients. I mean, how do you compute a Fourier coefficient? So it's W. Well, I take the function that I'm interested in, and I integrate it against my character. And this is over A mod K. Okay. And this satisfies as a function of the group, it satisfies the transformation law by left translation. Okay, but that's just the usual Fourier coefficient integral. So then, what does abelian Fourier analysis says? Well, it says that the Fourier expansion of this is the sum over all of these characters of the coefficient times the character. Right? I mean, that's what a Fourier expansion looks like. And if we set x equal to 0, we actually get what seems to be an expansion of the function phi itself. Now we're going to do a little bit of just duality theory. So A mod K is compact, and sort of its dual then is discrete, and by usual duality theory, the set of characters on K mod A is really nothing more than K itself, and if we fix a non-trivial character, and this is going to be fixed for a while, then any other character is of the form, let's say psi gamma of x, which is psi of gamma x for some gamma in K. Okay? So I can rewrite this, if I like, as the sum over gamma in K of W phi psi sub gamma of G. Now, if we continue this a little bit, I mean, now I'm just massaging my formula. When gamma is equal to zero, what does the zero Fourier coefficient look like? Well, zero, that's just the integral of phi 1x0, 1g. When gamma is equal to zero, that's just the trivial character. And that's zero by cuspidality. So gamma equals zero doesn't contribute anything. And when gamma is not zero, then sort of an easy change of variable in the integral gives that I can express the sort of the Fourier coefficient for the character psi sub gamma in terms of the Fourier coefficient for my fixed character, and all I do is right translate by that diagonal element. Okay? So I'll leave that as a small exercise. It's not very much. So we can rewrite our Fourier expansion as, well, I'm just going to re-index it by my fixed character. I let gamma run over now the non-zero elements of the field, and I do this translation. So phi of G is the sum gamma in K cross W phi gamma 0, 0, 1 G. And here, since I fixed my character, I'm not going to carry it around. Okay. And just to be suggestive, not perverse, K cross is really GL1K, right? And, of course, if I look at the translations in GL1, they're really not any. So I can rewrite it that way if I want to. That's just being perverse. So, but I can think about it in that terms if I want to.
Okay.
A little later on, I'll at least give you an indication of why, in some sense, this is the same Fourier expansion we had before for the classical modular form. But for right now, if you think about it, we got it in exactly the same way. These are the integrals that we used if you take, sort of push it back down to the upper half plane. These are the same integrals that we used to get the Fourier expansion before. So this is really should be the Fourier expansion we had before, just rewritten in a slightly different way. But this does tell you what you might want to look at when G is equal to GLN. So this suggests if G is equal to GLN, then we take our translations. These are the set of now upper triangular matrices. And let me put in the superdiagonal entries. Okay, so that's the max, that's the unipotent radical of a minimal parabolic, or it's the maximal unipotent subgroup. It is the analog of probably what I just erased. Yeah? The other one was right there underneath it. Now before, when I did this integral, I viewed my additive character as a character of this unipotent subgroup. The abelianization of this unipotent subgroup is just the sum of these sort of additive groups sitting here above the diagonal. So using psi, we can define a character of, well, it's really going to be NA, but since psi is a character of A, which is trivial on the rational points, this is also going to be trivial on the rational points. And that's compact again. By, well, I'm just it's just going to be psi of N is psi of the abelianization. So x12 plus down to xn minus 1. All right, so that's a well-defined character of that group of translations. The analog. Okay, let me leave that. Let me leave that board up there instead of sort of keeping, continuing to erase. Well, I guess I won't have that problem anymore now, will I? Oh no, I'm okay. So the analog of this, then, the psi. Whitaker function well I just write down that same integral except using that group of translations so it's going to be the integral cus form unipotent translations g psi inverse mdn. Okay, and as we said, when we talked about unipotent radicals, these are compact, so there's no problem of convergence. That's a well-defined function. It satisfies, just as before, if I left translate by something in this group, the character comes out. Okay, so it's the exact analog of what happened for GL2. And now it turns out the Fourier expansion that one wants is the analog of this just... Now I just, one is less than two. In fact, it's one less than two. And so now I'm just going to write down that same formula for one less than n, which I think is n minus one. Yeah. Fourier expansion for the cus form on GLN is phi of g as the sum gamma n GLN minus 1 mod translations W phi given by this integral gamma, that's an n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix, that's now an n by n matrix. Well, so what one does is the following. So for this, it turns out this is actually not that hard to prove. If the hard thing, if there is one, is to realize that this does you any good and that this is what you want. Okay? But it turns out it's not that hard to prove. This is this was independently written down by Piotrowski, Shapiro, and Shalika, the Fourier expansion on GLN. Let me give you just an idea of the proof for GL3, and then it's sort of an inductive argument, and to write it like most inductive arguments, to write them down is sort of a mess, and it would take more time than I want to spend right now. But let me show you what the idea is for GL3. Okay? So I begin as I did on GL2. And I look at this function. Okay? Well, I can write this as, I can break up this unipotent, I can look at the last column, and this is what one always does, one first looks at the last column. Okay? Abelian. Right? So I Fourier expand. I Fourier expand about the last column. I'll do it in steps. Yes, it's going to be an induction. I do it about the last column. I move one in. I do it about the next column. I move one in. I do it about the next column. Okay? So that's the first thing you do. And then what one notices, so what we did in the other case was we said, well, okay, I now have to, I express the characters for that last column in terms of the group somehow, or the field. So now, so this last column is sort of K mod A squared, and the characters for that are just K squared, right? Again, the same duality theory. GL2 acts on K squared with two orbits. Okay? One is zero, and the other one is, well, let me write things as rows now, thinking of the rows as being sort of dual to the columns. Everything else is in the orbit of this one vector. Okay? Now, the zero orbit contributes zero to the expansion by cuspidality. Right, that sort of corresponds to the trivial character, and integrating this against the trivial character, that is a unipotent subgroup, you get zero. So that doesn't contribute anything. And then the remaining orbits, oops, the remaining orbit, which is sort of open, one parameterizes by, well, GL2K modulo the stabilizer of that vector, which I'm going to call P2. So here P2 is, well, it's the AB01 group, if you like. It's the stabilizer of the vector 01. This is sort of the GL2 mirabolic. We'll talk about this a little later on. It's not quite a parabolic because it's got this one here. Okay? And so whatever my expansion is there, I re-index it in terms of this. Okay? And then for each term in the Fourier expansion, I expand in X1. Or in general, in the next column. And proceed. Okay. So that's what you do. And so you sort of build it up one abelian piece by another, and when you're done, that's what you get. Right? For GL3, the thing you're getting here is GL2 modulo the 2x2 unipotence. At this step, I already have GL2 modulo this thing. And when I do the expansion in the last column, this is going to sort of be expanded about in some sense, and I'm going to actually get GL2 mod just into after I do this step as well, as parameterizing my various things. So that's the way that it works. In general. All right, so it's just you successively move in, and that's what you get, and that's a useful thing as it turns out. Okay. So that's what the Fourier expansion is going to look like in the context of GLN. I should point out that this, as I said, this things I'm doing now are very GLN specific. One of the problems, at least for doing L functions via integral representations for other groups, is that one really, only has Fourier expansions like this in special cases. So basically, yeah. I mean, sometimes you can, not with Whitaker like this. Huh. Yeah. I mean, maybe they exist for other models or things, but yeah, we're already very GLN specific here. Okay. All right. I now want to stop and analyze these functions. So I'm not going to talk about sort of Whitaker models. Okay. I guess I should point out that if one does this, well, no, I can't do this yet. Never mind. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. All right, so I now want to consider the functions W phi, which appear in this expansion, where phi runs over the cusp forms. Okay. This is a canonical space of functions. It depends on the representation that I started with, and these are highly dependent on I had a choice of character involved in this, so let me put that in here. Okay. So the group here, everything I did, I just erased it. When I computed, just like with cusp forms, when I computed these Whitaker functions, I was integrating on the left. The group still acts on the right. So GA still acts on the right. And in fact, the map that sends phi to this to its Whitaker function actually intertwines my space of cusp forms with this space of functions. And it's actually an isomorphism. Okay? I should point out that given a phi, right, given a phi, the associated Whitaker function is non-zero, right? That's guaranteed because I can recover phi from the Whitaker function. Okay? So this map is injective, surjective by definition, and it intertwines because it's just right translation in both spaces. So this is actually an isomorphism. This is called the Whitaker model. Of pi and v pi. Okay? So, and it's going to be important for us. And it already occurs in the Fourier expansion. So that's the Whitaker model. So intertwined just means that if I right translate, so this is a representation. Gx by right translation. This is a representation, Gx by right translation. And intertwining just means the map from here to here preserves that as representation. So if you like the Whitaker model, the Whitaker function for the right translation is the right translation. Okay, so the action here goes to the action there. That's intertwined. Okay. So it's the same representation, but here I have cuss forms. Here I have these functions that transform by a character under the translation. And you can have, and it's an isomorphic representation, just an isomorphism. Yeah, it may not be conjugate in some sense. I mean, but it's just an isomorphism. So intertwining maps are morphisms in the category of group representations, if you like. So they preserve their from one right representation to the other that preserves the group action. Yeah. So the idea of either Whitaker functions or Whitaker models also makes sense for any of our local fields or groups. So I can look at GV, which is G of KV, so GLNR, GLNC, GLN of the periodic field. So if I fix an additive character, non-trivial, continuous psi, and this is just the character on the field itself, then as before, defines a character of the translations over the local field. That's still the upper triangular matrices again, and we can talk about the space of Whitaker functions. All smooth Whitaker functions on the local group. And this is just going to be, let me call it W psi V. It's just the smooth functions on the group such that if I take it and I move it by an upper triangular matrix on the left, it comes out with this character. And this is for all, if you like, translations and elements in the group. Okay? So that's the kind of functions that occur here. That's the analog of the functions that occur here. And then if I have a representation, I'm mainly concerned about local components of these cuspidal things when I decompose them. So, and those are going to be, let's see, if this is an irreducible admissible representation of the local group, then this is said to have a Whitaker model if there's an intertwining. So V pi into the space of Whitaker functions. Okay, so the group acts by right translation there once again. And I'm going to denote this by, so I don't want to use phi sub V because I'm not factoring cusp forms. So. Okay, and the image, well, that's what a Whitaker model is. So it says you can find a realization of this representation in this space of functions. Okay? And this is a space of functions that satisfies this sort of a transformation law on the left under the unipotence. Okay? For GLN, no, as long as it's not trivial. Yeah. Does not matter which character. Basically I can pass from one character to another by left translating by a diagonal matrix. But that's also special for GLN, that it doesn't really care which character you use. Now, let me point out that Whitaker models are really, so for a representation, to have a Whitaker model, is equivalent to the space having what's called a Whitaker functional, which I'll call lambda v. And so what this is, it's a linear functional, continuous linear functional on the space of the representation, such that it has the same transformation law. So psi v, and I move a vector by something in my upper triangular group, that should come out with a character. And this is for all C in the representation space and N in my local group of translations. Okay? And oftentimes one proves things using the functionals instead of the space. So note that a model CV goes to some Whitaker function, gives a functional. And what it is just lambda v is the Whitaker function evaluated at the identity. Okay, because I translate by n here, I translate by n here. Intertwining means I move n to the right, but this is the identity, so it's the same as moving it to the left, and then it comes out with a character. And a functional gives a model by CV of G is I take the functional and I apply it to pi VG. Right? And now if I translate this on the left by n, this is a representation, so it translates to the left by n here, and then it comes out. So these are the same thing. But using the language of Whitaker functionals, one can prove the following fairly amazing theorem. This is due to Gelfand and Kajdan. If in the non-Archimedean context, in the Archimedean context, it's due to Shalika. And it says, given an irreducible admissible representation, of my local group. So let me make it specific. Well, no, let me just say GV, because this is actually this is actually general, pretty much, of GV, although they proved it in the GLN context. There is at most a one-dimensional space of, and now here I'm going to put continuous Whitaker functionals. I.e., another way to state that, since Whitaker functionals are the same thing as having Whitaker models, it basically says that the representation has a unique Whitaker model, if any. I.e., has at most one Whitaker model. So this is the uniqueness of local Whitaker models. No, actually the reason that I shifted to functionals is because what one actually shows is one views this as sort of an induced representation, induced from this character of the unipotent, and you want to show that that's multiplicity free. You do that by analyzing intertwining distributions, which in this case are sort of Bessel distributions. Okay. And you can interpret these linear, these sort of functionals as being related to those Bessel distributions. So you sort of, actually now I'm a little bit, I don't know. I don't think you necessarily need that in the proof, but I will need that later on. I'll need the relationship with functionals. No, except here is one place where you do need functionals. So at the finite places, there's not much topology going on. This just says there's a unique Whitaker functional. At the Archimedean places, if you dealt with just admissible representations of the Hecke algebra, there are n factorial different independent Whitaker functionals, algebraic ones. Only one of them extends continuously to the completion. Okay, so to get the uniqueness here, we're actually using the fact, we're using that topology at infinity. Because algebraically, in the context of just Hecke algebras, this is not true. The space of Whitaker functionals is n factorial. Okay. But only one of them extends continuously with the topology. That's what Shalika proved. Okay, so it gives me a cleaner statement of that. It's the order of the Weyl group. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Let me give you some consequences of these, of this. And then I'll save all the multiplicity one stuff for next time. So here's some. Oh, so first off, either locally or globally. So this is a definition. Either locally, in the context of this theorem, or globally, in the context of where our Fourier expansions were, a representation, so these are irreducible. Well, irreducible admissible. Which has a Whitaker model. It's called generic. So that's what a generic representation is. It just means it has one of these models. And as you can see from that theorem, at least locally, if not, not everything would necessarily have one, but if it does have one, it's unique. Okay, but these are the so-called generic representations. Now, if we have, so now let's go back to global. Pi. Okay, so it can be our cuspidal guy, but it's irreducible and admissible, and so it factors. We have our decomposition. So pi is a restricted product of the pi v somehow, possible with completions at infinity. Okay. Now, if we have a Whitaker functional, on v pi. Okay, so that definition of a Whitaker functional makes sense locally. If I have a global Whitaker functional on v pi, then we get a local Whitaker functional. And all I do is I just take a local place. I have to be a little bit careful, but I embed it in my tensor product. My restricted tensor product, which is isomorphic to v pi, and then I apply lambda. Okay? So I can always get a local Whitaker functional this way. And then if you're careful, so you have to be a little bit careful doing this. It's not completely automatic, but then we get local ones, and in fact, lambda turns out to be the tensor product of these guys. So we get a decomposition of Whitaker functionals. Moreover, that shouldn't be too hard to believe. Given compatible, or suitable, I guess I want suitable, something. I need some word here. Of local Whitaker functionals, and now suitable means that for almost all places, I need this Whitaker functional to be one on, that's my, remember I always have a unique k fixed vector at the non-Archimedean places that this restricted tensor product is taken with respect to. I need these things to be one on there, okay? Because then if I have a suitable collection with this property, then it turns out if I take their tensor product, this is a global Whitaker functional. On v pi, okay? Okay, so here implicitly I'm using that my character decomposes as additive, local additive characters, and so these are Whitaker with respect to the appropriate local character. All right. Then this local uniqueness theorem then has three important corollaries, global corollaries for us. And so let me state those while I've got this up here. Are we okay? Okay. So here's three corollaries of our local uniqueness. Okay, so the corollary one is, well, through this process of relating local to global Whitaker functionals, I have global uniqueness. Okay, so if pi, v pi is an irreducible admissible representation of GA, then pi, v pi has at most one Whitaker model. That's just patching things together like this. And this is, of course, up to scalars. Now, if so, if pi v pi is in fact a cuspidal representation, then we've seen it has a Whitaker functional, right? And it's given by the integral phi n g psi, oops, I want to add the identity. Got a Whitaker functional. It's not zero. So, corollary two, if pi, and now let me decompose it, is a cuspidal automorphic representation, then pi and all of its local components are generic. Okay. So if you're only interested in cusp forms on GLN, everything's generic. There's not a problem. And finally, the most important for us, I know I'm over time, but what can you do? These are the sort of the corollaries of this one result, so I need to get them up here. The last thing is, if the last corollary is the factorization of Whitaker functions. Okay, so if pi v pi is cuspidal automorphic, decomposes, same thing for spaces, and I take a cusp form which is decomposable, i.e., under this isomorphism, this thing goes to a pure tensor, okay? A pure tensor. Then the Whitaker function for phi is the product over all local places of the Whitaker functions of the pieces. So, even though, as I emphasized before, cusp forms don't factor as functions on the group, their Whitaker functions do. And in fact, the proof is basically there. That's the proof. So let me essentially give you the proof. It says, well, what is the Whitaker function of phi? Well, one way to think of it is it's given by Whitaker functional. Okay? But under this decomposition, this decomposes and this decomposes. And then this is just the product, local That's what factors. All right. So that's. I know y'all are going to hate me, but that's okay. There's just certain things that have to be done. If I take a cuss form, which is a Hecke eigenfunction, okay, and I take it and I go to its automorphic form, and then I go to its Whitaker function. Turns out this is decomposable. This factors. There'll be an Archimedean part and a non-Archimedean part. And if you take the non-Archimedean part and you evaluate it at that, you get out the nth Fourier coefficient. And if you take the Archimedean part and you evaluate it, well, let me put my y in there. Then you get ny to the minus n, no, to the m over 2 e to the minus 2 pi my. And so it's from the factorization of the Whitaker function that you can compute each one of these things separately that you can now sort of relate this to the Fourier expansion of the classical form. Yes. Yes. But, this is what factors. This is what factors. And it all comes from this one theorem, basically. Okay. Now I'm actually five honest minutes over. So, I apologize. But that gets this bit on Whitaker models finished before we take a 2-week break. And when we come back, I'll show you how to use this to prove both multiplicity 1 and strong multiplicity 1 for GLN.